Sky for Business. Hope you know a bit about it. We're not going to dwell into two things around, what we had in Link and, we're going to look at the deltas between what's new in Sky for Business, what have we introduced, what's some of the capabilities. I want to show some of this stuff as well, rather than just go through slide after slide. So we got some live demos, which 10 minutes ago, the good old demo gods were playing up and things weren't quite working, our network was dying and all sorts of things. So hopefully we'll be good for that, and we're going to run through. So this is the first, let's say, of four sessions, which is more of an intro overview, level 200. You'll see we have three other sessions, and I'll just run through those quickly just in case you're interested. So first one up is tomorrow, 9 a.m. again, start, which is a Skype for Business video interoperability masterclass. A lot of the questions we always get around Skype for Business and previously around Link were, oh, how do I interop with my video platform? What's the best way to get this Room thing working? What are my different options? And there's just a plethora of different ways in which you can do stuff. And so we really thought this thing deserved a topic on its own where you can dive in and really get to the nuts and bolts and understand what are the various options when you want to do some sort of video interoperability to Room systems, to mobiles, you name it. We're going to cover that one off there. The second session, again, all level 300, is around architecture options. With Skype for Business, fundamentally, the architecture is still the same as Link 2013, but there are newer options around hybrid and additional capability around online, right? So we've got sort of on-prem, hybrid, online capability. So we're going to drill into all of those different architecture options and considerations. If you're looking to deploy Skype for Business, what are the things you consider that will drive you towards one particular architecture or another? And then on Friday, if you're still really, really keen and into Skype for Business, we have a voice interoperability masterclass. Again, we talk about the video, but customers say, well, I've got this PBX, I've got this old thing sat in the corner, and I want to make that thing work with Skype for Business. I want to sweat that asset a lot longer before we go, whole hog, or how do we do a transition over time and evolve ourselves towards a unified comms platform? So again, we'll be looking at all the different ways in which you can interoperate for the users, from sort of desktop integration, server-server, lots of different ways, and we'll cover all of those things off. So that's a bit of a snapshot of the four sessions which we have, including this one. Unfortunately, trying to get all this amount of content we wanted to get for Skype for Business in four sessions is hard, right? So even in this session, there's no way we can cover everything. We probably need another 8, 9, 10 sessions to really get through some of this stuff. So what we wanted to focus on in this one is really what's new, all right? So we're going to talk about clients, what's new in a client perspective. Then talk about meetings, okay? There's additional capability coming in the meeting space. There's new hardware which drives some of the meeting experience with Skype for Business, and we'll talk and show some of that stuff as well. And then we'll go into, at the back end when we look about the server and we look about the online service, what is the new capability we're really bringing through around there? And what we wanted to do as well, when we've done this session previously, the Q&A ran and ran and ran and ran and ran, right? So we're going to try and, I'll just put my timer on to try and stop at about 45 minutes, so we should get a good 10 to 15 minutes having some open questions. I have my colleague down the front, Vaktang, if you want to just stand up. For those of you that don't know Vaktang, Vaktang is our Asia technical lead around Skype for Business. Okay, so during Q&A, I will drag him up here. So if you ask a question he doesn't know, I'll say he'll buy you a beer, but maybe that's putting him on the spot a little bit around there, right? But what he doesn't know is not worth knowing around Skype for Business. He will, okay, there's a promise around that. You really don't know what you let yourself in for. Okay, so one marketing slide, promise, right? Around stuff. And this is really, really important that we've got to cover this one off, because how many times I go into a meeting and say, right, come and tell to me about Skype for Business. Okay, great. And I said, well, it's just Skype, isn't it? It's just this thing I use at home, and you're just using it inside my organization now. Now, yes, we've changed the name from Link Server, okay? But it's more than a name change. underneath the hood, when you look at it, and we'll talk about the architecture, and we'll go through those in the sessions, this is still very much Link Server, okay? Enterprise grade, high availability, disaster recovery, security, encryption, archiving for compliance. All of the things we have with Link 2013 have evolved, have become extended with new capability, and are now in Skype for Business Server 2015 and Skype for Business Service as the online service as well for 2015, all right? So this is not a new product that's based on the Skype consumer thing. Right, so think about that from an underlying architecture and deployment perspective. Nothing really changes under the hood there. But what has changed is we really sort of wanted to recognize that, we've got 300 million active daily Skype users worldwide, right? Using Skype consumer on PCs, on phones, Xboxes, you name it, across the world on there. What we recognize from that is people are familiar with the experience. It's very, very obvious. You know, I don't know how many people have probably used Skype in the room. It'll probably be almost everybody when we ask that question, but people know how to use it. You know, the interface, if I want to make a call, I click on the phone icon. You know, it is very, very intuitive. What we found was we wanted to evolve to that. So as I'm Gen Y or millennial generation coming into the workplace now, you know, it is a familiar experience. I don't need to relearn tools. And that's critical when we look at how adoption and adoption curves really take place, you know, with Skype for Business. Link is a really sticky application anyway, right? Users love it, you know, it adds a lot of value instantaneously. They understand it and want to play with it. You know, by really simplifying and streamlining that interface and making it familiar, we're now seeing these adoption curves, when you deploy this inside an organization, really just go vertical, right, and take off across that. So just one thing across. So we have Link Server 2013, all of the best of breed capability we have there, evolved in Skype for Business. Okay, but from a front-end perspective, we've introduced this new sort of consumer-like experience that the users will see and feel when they go through it. And we'll show some of this stuff anyway. Now, fundamentally today, be aware that the Skype for Business PC client I have on my desktop, the Skype for Business consumer clients, they are separate. It is not one and the same. The experience looks the same, all right? But it is still, you know, a separate client set that we have when we work through it. Okay, so with that, we'll move on. So what's new in clients? When we think about Skype for Business and clients, the client dev team for Microsoft around what was Link and now with Skype for Business, they've been pretty busy, right? I like to say it's probably the most open, agnostic bit of software we have at Microsoft in terms of any platform and any device and any network, you know? It doesn't matter what you have as a user, hey, there'll be a Skype for Business client for it or coming, a Link client for it. You know, again, the Link 2013 clients will work with Skype for Business as well across it. You know, when we start at mobile, you know, we recently launched, I don't know if you've seen it, on Windows Phone, there is a new Skype for Business mobility experience. You know, very, very rich feature set. I get voice over Wi-Fi, I get voice over cellular, I get video over those modalities as well. I can consume content across there, I get presentation control. I get a really rich experience from a mobile client now that looks familiar to me as I do on my desktop. And that Skype for Business update has been rolled out across Windows Phone, and there are updates coming for iOS and for Android, which we'll see coming through later part of this year. Okay, again, they're in sort of preview right now. Okay, so you'll see those rolling out and updating to really close out the loop around the mobile devices. From a desktop, now I won't talk about this one because we're going to show some of that stuff as we have coming through here. We have the Mac client currently based on the Link version coming through. We have meeting room systems, Link Room System, or formerly known as Link Room System, now known as Skype Room System. If you go down to the Polycom stand, they have what they call their CX8000 demo in there, which is effectively one of these Link Room Systems or Skype Room Systems on here, okay? It consists of a camera, screen, normally a touch screen or dual touch screens at the front of the room, and a sort of a 8 to 10 inch room controller, which is touch, that sits on the table in a meeting room, and I can go very, very easily walk into a room, bingo, one touch, start my meeting, okay? Don't need to worry about what IP address I need to connect to the other video room. It's just an easy experience, you know? We say from room to meeting inside 5 seconds, once you walk in that room, as soon as you can walk up to the screen and press join, bang, it's in. So really change that whole experience in terms of meeting rooms, and I'm gonna show some other capability we have there from clients and devices as we move through. Phones, you know, Skype for Business is a communications platform. You know, we think about IP phones. There are some scenarios, there are, you know, some personas or different work styles where I may not even have a compute device, all right? I just have a physical IP phone that's on a desk. It may be shared between users or, you know, in a reception area and sat there across there. There are a range of different devices when I look at phones or end user devices. Again, running clients on them to really enhance the user experience. I don't need to think about numbers even from a phone before I communicate with. You know, many of them I can search for a contact, I can see presence and availability, and I can initiate a communication from there. No more extension number dialing and those sorts of things, even from the phone device. VDI scenarios are addressed. We have a VDI plugin, or a number of different ways in which we can address that comes there, which will enable you to sort of take that thin client world, but also bring in real-time media, such as voice and such as video, which has always been a real challenge, right, and how we address that in that thin client scenario. And then, you know, really again, looking at the collaboration space or the meeting rooms, and unfortunately we were hoping to have one of these to actually show and demo this week, but there's been such a demand on the factory, I don't know if you saw this Surface Hub, Now, if any of you have seen it, it's sort of a, either a 55 or an 84-inch screen, either 1080p or UHD 4K for the larger one. It has two embedded cameras on either side of the screen, okay, 1080p cameras. And it has an out-of-the-box experience. You know, it's a Windows 10 compute device, but it has an out-of-the-box experience for Skype for Business. You know, I can walk up, join a Skype for Business meeting, stand at the thing and present, 100-point touch. It's one of the things you have to feel to really understand the value of it. It's a great collaborative experience. Okay, pre-orders are available on these guys now, and New Zealand is one of the launch countries. And I think we're shipping now. I think I saw from sort of about January timeframe, 2016, when these will actually be coming out. But a very different price point from where we've seen traditional video conferencing or collaboration devices. So again, we've got this whole range of some existing, some newer clients, and an evolution as it moves through across it, which we can see on Skype for Business. Okay, so let me switch over and bring up my Skype for Business client on here. Press the right button. Here we go. All right, so first thing you notice, you know, around the Skype for Business client, it's sort of familiar if you're familiar with Link 2013. But by the same token, you know, it's got this sort of new look and new feel. We've got nice, round, shiny photos across there, you know, with the present bubble stipulating availability of people I have in here. And I have all my groups and contacts and everything else coming around there. You know, I still have my sort of tab view, so I have my contacts view. I have my sort of conversation history view, dial pad view, and calendar for my meetings for the day, which I have around there. You know, and even within each view, I have these sub-menus where I can change, you know, by status or my relationship around there, or new contact requests, you know, as these guys come in. So very, very simple. Again, just like the old experience, anywhere I go, I hover over somebody for availability. We expose the quick contact card. Again, you know, very, very simple. IM, voice, video, exposing the Outlook contact card for more information or launch additional information. You know, if I go down there, I can see Vaktang, who I just introduced down the front on there. He's available. Hey, he's even video capable, so I'm getting that same additional present status information around what the capability of a user is before I initiate a communication with them. And again, it's very, very simple, no different from Link here. And, you know, hey, this is real basic stuff. I can go in and we can start an IM conversation. My keyboard connects to it, if you can. Across here, and we can go in across, right? One-click escalation to go from any modality across here. So if we want to go from a voice call or a video call, so I can step that up straight to a voice call. Again, here's where we start to get in a bit of the mercy around the network connectivity, because we're just on the shared wireless network. Again, idiot tips that pop up, right? Hey, your speaker is muted. You can't hear anything? Well, maybe you want to turn your volume up, right? So, you know, like your Outlook mail tips, we're sort of giving you those audio tips straight to the user, you know, rather than sitting there shouting at the PC because the other person can't hear them coming across it. You know, one thing that's really changed around the client, though, is the experience in how you actually do stuff, okay? There used to be in Link, you know, I had to go and I had to hover over things and expose submenus, then go and click on something to make something happen, all right, around there. Now, it's really obvious. If I want to do something, okay, I click on it. I click on the video icon, and I get my video preview coming from my webcam coming through, all right? So again, no auto start a video. If I want to go in, I then click, I start my video, all right? We've escalated from a voice call, or IM, to a voice call, to video call. Vaktang will be getting my video preview feed that you're getting there. He's getting his video stream. He goes and starts his video. We will get that coming back, consuming in my way. That was your cue to start a video, Vaktang, on there. But okay, maybe we are having problems with that. Wow, we're getting some network coming through. All right, now, again, we still get user things like network quality indicators, right? So you see the little red bar, oh, it's just changed white across there. That's giving me real-time status updates around network. So it's giving me user information, all right? When the network gets really, really bad, again, we'll put tips up there. Hey, network connectivity is causing video issues. Really telling the user, because, you know, at the end of the day, I could, you know, well, I am set on an internet connection. It's unmanaged. I'm at the mercy of whatever gets thrown at that network, right, to the detriment of this. Now, one thing that is different in this call, you might think, well, it's just the same as Link, is think about the codec selection we've actually used, and we'll talk a little bit about this in voice, right? But we've added what was the Skype consumer audio codec into the codec selection stack in Skype for Business, okay? So Silk, okay, which has a really, really high MOS score, mean opinion score, around unmanaged networks, will now sit at the top of the priority stack for us to negotiate our media when we do audio across there, okay? Video still H.264 we have coming through there. So all of the other codecs we previously supported are still there, And I think in the voice session, we'll go through the various bandwidths and implications and what those mean around those different codecs. But now we've added that into the mix. That becomes important when we talk about consumer federation in a moment into the Skype world, as it has coming in there. So real simple, one-to-one, escalating into a video call. You know, again, real stuff already, like if I go on here and if I click on my share button, again, we've enhanced and changed some of the menu we have around here. I can go on here and present my desktop. I'll get Vacton to do it in a second, but if I just click on present my desktop, all right, it's going to give me a graphical view. Here it's just showing this is the desktop you're going to share. Are you sure? Yep, go for it. If I had multiple monitors set up, you used to just have to select primary monitor or secondary monitor or both monitors. You weren't really sure which one was going up. Now you get this sort of visual indication. It shows you on each one across there what's actually being displayed. All right, so I'll cancel that because there's no good me presenting something coming in. Now, if Vacton shares something, again, subject to network, you see if I hover over there, it says the network quality is getting pretty bad right now. All right, I'll accept the meeting content. So Vacton's pushed something out to me across here, and we'll start to render that up and actually display that across into my client. He said, look how slow the video is going. We are struggling with network. Here we go. All right. So Vacton's busy in the front row looking at TradeMe, you know, doing stuff across there. So, okay, we get into a collaboration session, person to person. Again, if I want to, I can request control. So, you know, I can ask Vacton, do you give me control of your application? You know, this is a real, real simple feature, and IT teams love it because they do sort of PC support over this thing now or talk people through stuff. Users love it because they get stuck on an application. They go and speak to the expert, and how do I do this? And they'll drive them and actually go through. Now I have control of the application, right? I can start clicking in here and, you know, handing for a new car or whatever it is, okay, on Vacton's browser. At any one time, you know, I don't even need to have the application on my device, right? So we're effectively sharing that across RDP. Moving forward, you know, we'll be looking to also introduce an option of actually encapsulating and doing sharing across H.264 inside an H.264 stream as well. So to get real see what I see sort of sharing capability as we have coming in there. So two-person call, hey, yeah, but what about if I want to go and grab somebody else, right, and drag them into this? Again, no different from where we were with Link in this side. I'm just going to go and search for William Lee, who's Polycom, and he's over there at the stand. I'm just going to go grab him, drag him and drop him into the call. Okay, so we're actually escalating this now into a multi-person call, or at least control of Vacton's browser. So now William's got an invite. You see we've got three participants coming in here. When he pops up, okay, I'll just bring that up there on the participant list by clicking on it. We'll see we'll get, let's hide this stage. He is joining us. Okay, just want to end your sharing session from your Vacton for a sec. We're still joining in terms of network, right? We're getting really, really slow, right? We see you've got the spinning wheel on the invite coming through. But again, what we'll do is if that catches up with us, is that we'll actually then build out, all right, and we'll actually get the whole gallery view around multi-party video. So we still do the 5+1 in terms of video views coming in there. Looks like he's slowly starting to join across the network as we have coming in through. And let's hide this stage across here. All right, we've got him coming in. So Vacton's just about getting some video coming in. So that's a client experience of a multi-person call. The other thing that's really great, and one of the experiences I mentioned, was around web, all right, from an experience perspective. Web right now is really based around a meeting join experience with Skype for Business, okay? But what it means is if I go and if I grab the meeting info for this here, I'm just going to copy my meeting join. Excuse me, my mouse is not working very well on this screen here. So I'm just going to trick this thing to thinking that I don't have a Skype for Business client installed, right? So if I was invited to a Skype for Business meeting, okay, as an external user, so I'm sat at home, I don't have Skype for Business, I don't have anything at all, I just have a browser in here, okay, and I click on the link to join somebody's Skype for Business meeting, this is the browser experience I get through. So it'll be Mickey Mouse as a guest. So I'll come in here and I'll just join the meeting. Again, you saw there was an option there where I could have signed in with my credentials from work if I was using someone else's machine. Okay, I'm coming through there. Now you'll see as I come into that meeting in a web browser, so this is my web browser experience I'm now showing up on there. The experience virtually identical to the rich client experience, okay? I'm getting multi-party video once we get a bit of network coming through there. I'm still getting my notes or indicators, saying my speaker is muted, turn up your volume, your mic's off, all of that good stuff coming through there. The little one here, this is actually my Skype client where I'm in the meeting as well, right? Just coming through here, just so you understand. Now, one of the great things as well around the Skype for Business client experience is if I go to any application at all that I have open on my desktop, here I've just got a browser running, but my actual Skype for Business client running in here, this is the active call window. So we have this always on top capability, which was something we brought over from the Skype consumer world to actually sit there, all right? So whatever I'm doing, perhaps I'm in a meeting and I'm watching someone there, I can go off and open Excel and do some work, do some email coming through, and I always have the active call window, and I can just double tap on that, and I can actually bring that back all the way across. Now you'll see, I flicked across there, it's my Skype client. Okay, just going back to it. There's my web app client. If you actually stand these side by side with the same views displayed, you wouldn't actually know the difference between the two across there. That's how rich the web client experience has really got now. Another one, if I was in a person-to-person call with Vactang and we had video and everything showing there, you put that active call, you stand that up side by side against a Skype consumer client in a video call and a Skype business client in a call, there is, again, there's no difference. And again, it's very, very deliberate in trying to simplify and streamline that whole client experience we have coming through in there. Okay, so let's just drop off this call. Give someone some bandwidth back. I'm just going to drop this one out as well. So I just want to show a couple of other things around the client. Okay, so you know, I just search for somebody there, they were in my contacts, or if they're in my corporate directory, you know, I'll go out and find them, you know, we can do that in real time, and it'll go out and return me, you know, people across there. But one of the great things we have now, when we talk about we introduced that Silk Codec stack into Skype for Business, we've introduced our video stack into Skype Consumer from Skype for Business, now means we can have a really rich federation capability between the Skype Consumer world and the Skype for Business world. Now, we had that with Link 2013, but with this and the new client, it's been significantly enhanced because as well as being able to search a directory and search my corporate directory and my local contacts in here, I now have the ability from my Skype for Business client to search the global Skype consumer directory. Very, very powerful. It means I can then go add a contact and initiate communications with them. So thinking B2C, C2B scenarios, this is something that's really starting to be explored by a lot of customers around there and how they can change their external relationships, be it with suppliers or customers alike. The demo I like to show on this is I'm going to search my son, right? Jack Dolly on there. Bang. It's searched on there. It's brought me back one return result on there, okay? Presence unknown. That's because I just have Jack stored as a phone number in my contacts. I don't have any other information around him, right, from Outlook that it's returned across there. When I search for somebody, what you will also see here, if I just hover my mouse there, is there is another button called the Skype directory. That is the global Skype directory button. I click on this guy, okay? I'm now going to go and search those however hundreds of millions of objects we have sat in there right now, and even a fairly sort of, I'll say fairly uncommon name, Jack Dolly, right, it's not John Smith, you can see the results that it'll return. There are lots. I was going to say something else then, but it's been recorded. There are lots of them that come through here. So, oh, great, I can search the directory. If I search for John Smith, I might have several hundred thousand results coming back to me across there. So useful, but not that useful once you get that much sort of data returned across there. So again, there's some additional smarts in here, all right? So I can narrow it down, right? I know Jack Dolly's in Auckland, that's where he lives. I'm just going to go and search for Jack Dolly in Auckland across the Skype directory. Now, it's returned and narrowed those search results down to me based on there, and it's returned, you know, the one result. If his photo was published on there, if our network catches up, it'll pop his photo across there that he has from his Skype consumer account coming in there as well. Now, it doesn't mean I can just search for somebody and then hound them, call them, you know, start a video communication, all right? We have to have that two-way trust established across there, okay? So I would have to add that contact on there, and the recipient would have to then, you know, say, yes, I want to add Paul Dolly as a contact on there. So you've got that two-way trust set up from a contact perspective, then we can have communications. Okay, and so today we offer peer-to-peer communications around presence, IM, voice and video, person to person across there. Those are the scenarios that are currently supported with that one coming in there. Now, when we show that, the question that normally gets asked is, well, what does that mean from, does that mean people in the world and using Skype can go and search for Paul Dolly at Microsoft.com and hound me, and I'm going to get suddenly hounded by, you know, requests and all these things coming out there? No, you don't expose your corporate directory to the Skype consumer world. Do we cover this off in architecture at all, or we don't touch it in there? But essentially what we're doing is we're actually going out through Edge, okay, out to the Skype consumer cloud, and that is the boundary, if you like, okay? We're taking encrypted media across there and out through to that Skype cloud, all right, so we get everything secured. So, the other thing that comes up is I don't want to let Skype into my organization. You know, there's this sort of historical sort of fear, especially around the security guys, around, you know, how it just traverses their firewalls. None of that happens. It's all managed by Skype for Business, comes in through and flows through Edge Server, and how the communication comes in and outside of the organization across there. Okay, so that's a little bit around PC client, a little bit around the web client, multi-person call. You know, some of it was familiar from Link. Some of that stuff hopefully you've seen on there is, you know, is some of the new capability we've added in. Again, we don't have heaps of time in terms of which we can actually drive through into a lot of the other detail across here. But suffice to say, I have my, you know, historical data across here. I have my phone icon if you really want to click on buttons and dial traditional phone numbers. And I have my meetings and stuff coming up through there in the feed. If I have an online meeting, 2 o'clock, I've got a call with Korea, okay? If I want to, I can just click and join directly from my client. I don't need to step out into my, even the Outlook meeting invite to actually join that online meeting, all right? A blue one signifies an online meeting, and we can actually click away and join there, all right? So that's, you know, some of the basics around the client. We will slip over there and actually drop back into the presentation. All right, so, from clients, let's just change of gear and talk around meetings and what's new in the meeting space. Now, we talk about Skype for Business in the meeting space as being applicable in any type of meeting environment that you want to have, however you want to do it. Again, from whatever device you want to take it from, whatever meeting room or size or scale you want to take it from. You see some great marketing terminology for some of this stuff. It's nothing to do with me. The vibe, apparently, is a meeting space. Across there, but look at the different scenarios on here. You know, from the personal experience on the go. So again, whether I'm just joining that, you know, meeting from a smartphone, I have coming through there. But again, having rich meeting experience, so I can consume, so I can view content coming through there, so I can have video, all right? So I can manage the meeting from a mobile phone if I've got a bunch of people in there, you know, from Skype for Business. Again, from an architectural perspective, limits and scales haven't really changed. So you're looking at 250 or 1,000 users in a meeting, depending on your architecture options as we come through. But there is a new type of meeting I'll touch on and we'll show shortly. So you know, on the go, sort of on the laptop, on the mobile phone. My stage is really this sort of, we call this personal space here, whether it's a small person office, okay, where again, normally traditionally dominated by, you know, a webcam. You know, I have a webcam on my PC. That becomes my meeting experience using a headset or whatever it happens to be. Or as we think around, you know, some of the Surface Hub and the small Surface Hub coming in there, you know, with the list price of sort of $6,999 US, that can potentially fit down there, especially in the executive world. You know, looking, offering a rich collaboration conferencing experience coming through. The huddle room, now this is a really interesting one because meeting rooms have traditionally, it's either been very, very low end where I've had my PC and a webcam, or it's very, very high end. We're talking, you know, telepresence like hundreds of thousands of dollars, big, big, big conference platforms, you know, with high-end cameras and screens and dedicated for the room environment. What's never really been there is solutions that really address in a meaningful way the huddle room. You know, we've had customers who have gone and built bespoke solutions and customized the client and built some, you know, out of the APIs, you know, from Link and Skype for Business and built some stuff for their small meeting rooms. But what we have is a range of devices which are starting to evolve from a bunch of vendors and manufacturers now that really enhance and make this a viable proposition where you can have that four-person, six-person small meeting room. Normally, you've just got a screen in there, right? You know, you've just got a TV screen on a wall. People would go in there for a meeting and plug in a laptop and project, you know, and maybe a conference phone on the desk, right? That's the sort of the huddle room typical experience. Now, working with Polycom, there is a new device just about to hit the market. This is not available as yet. And again, I was hoping to show this today, but we're actually going to show this tomorrow in the video interop session we have coming through. This is called the Polycom Roundtable 100. Okay. So co-developed, designed by Microsoft and Polycom. This is just a small Intel NUC, right? You see it's got a, well, you can't really see on there. I've got, basically have an HDMI port, so I plug it into my room, I plug it into the display. I have an Ethernet port that needs internet connectivity, all right? It must be able to connect out to the internet from this device. This is an unmanaged device, okay? It has a couple of USB ports, comes with a dedicated speakerphone mic, okay, on here, USB, and comes with 1080p business grade webcam, all right? So $1,000 US list is the price. Again, it's not available yet, so don't quote me on local pricing or when we're gonna get them in this part of the world and that sort of thing. Go hassle the Polycom guys, all right, on that one. But this device at $1,000 means I can literally go into a small meeting room, one of these huddle rooms, plug it in and forget about it and leave it in the meeting room. The experience of the game, what we'll show tomorrow on this thing, is very, very different from anything you've seen from a meeting room device when it comes in, all right? Yeah, you know, I don't have a dedicated console. I don't have a dedicated PC or a laptop inside the room to actually drive this device. What I have is a companion app that runs on my smartphone. So Windows Phone, Android Phone, iOS, doesn't matter across there. The companion app, basically, when I first go into a room that's got one of these things, there's a lovely sort of array of different images that are displayed on there, which basically get pulled from Bing. Okay, again, this is what it's getting from the internet. And it's actually hooked up to Azure to get a bunch of this information. Okay, and there's a code on the screen, and there's like three simple steps to how to connect and start your meeting. All right. So step one, enter this code on your app. There's like a, you go on your app, on the companion app, and enter, you know, the code 1234, and it pairs to this device. Okay, bango. And then it's forevermore, it's in my app list. So if I walk into that room, it's always there. And I can have multiples of those added in across. Now, if I have a Skype for Business meeting, okay, as a user, so I've got that link that I had on my PC, you know, the blue one where I could right-click and join. Now, those meetings are also listed in my app, okay, across there. So I can literally now walk into the room, open my app, press join, and bingo, my meeting starts, and it starts on the display that's in there, okay, without anything else at all, okay? Effectively, I'm connecting across the internet from my smartphone device, okay, across there, syncing up to Azure, which is essentially establishing the signaling connection and the credentials down where the meeting room device will then go and join for me using my credentials, all right? I then get a really, really nice user experience around, you know, I get that same multi-party view around video across there, and my smartphone now becomes the controller where I can mute, I can change the gallery view, I can change it to gallery and content or the speaker view across there, and all of those control your volume controls and things. Everything is driven from an app on the smartphone. It's one of the things, again, it's very, 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 very simple for users to adopt and actually use across there. Right, now, this is the first of a range of different devices. So this one, as I say, is an unmanaged device, but it's the sort of thing, you know, at $1,000, you just throw into a room and literally forget all about it across there. So you know, the huddle room is an interesting space. And at that price point, I think, you know, we're going to see this big take up of these Skype for Business meetings really driving down into that space. When we think around, you know, the next gen conference room we have coming in there, so this is really where things such as Skype Room System, Surface Hub, they come to the fore to really address that. And again, we're starting to see the price points of these things really, really come down and make them far more viable. You know, you can buy the Link Room System or the Skype Room System now without the displays, which has, you know, drastically reduced the price. I'll say the Surface Hub pricing, you know, $6,999 US or $19,999 US for the big 85 one across there. You know, for the out-of-the-box experience, we don't need to think around going and buying ports and additional hardwares and gateways and MCUs, because all of that just comes from your Skype Business service. You know, and those devices, including this guy, sit and happily work whether you're using Office 365. And I think officially this is supported just on Office 365 as a device. The Roundtable 100 works happily as well on a on-prem Skype for Business server as well as the online service. And then we get out towards, you know, the auditorium. And here we start to see some sort of customization around there. And again, there's a few vendors who have built stuff. Polycom, interestingly, I'm only plugging them because all the stuff's downstairs so you can go and see it and have a play around there. There are other vendors as well across there. But from an auditorium perspective, they've taken their Skype Room System and they've taken their, obviously, the Eagle Eye producer and the director and the big camera so it can actually use it in a large-scale sort of auditorium and it'll do tracking. So as I'm moving across the stage across there, this thing's going to focus and zoom and track me across. So for anybody remote around there, you get a great in-room and remote experience, you know, around there. So think of e-learning or really sharing amongst larger groups. So whatever the type of meeting scenario, right, we say, hey, we've got it covered. across there. But there's one other one that's probably not mentioned on here, which is the large scale meeting. And you know, we said Skype for Business scales pretty well, depending on your architecture, 250 or 1,000 users on a call. There are not many meetings that take place anywhere that have that more than that. I don't get many phone calls saying, Paul, we need 1,050 people on a call. What do we need to do, right? It doesn't happen very often. But there is one scenario that does. And it, for a lot of larger organizations, it may only be once a year or once a quarter. And it's the, hey, I'm a large corporate and I want to do a shareholder broadcast and I've got 8,000 shareholders and I want to be able to effectively have a meeting with those people. Or I'm the CEO of the organization and I want to reach every single of my 9,000 employees across the organization and give them the company update on a quarterly basis and have that come through. So think around that large scale meeting, which typically is a one-way experience. So it's more of a webcast, okay? So, it's where I would go in, I would share content and video and voice and talk, and everybody else in the room would just go in via a web browser and consume that experience. Now, Skype for Business introduced something called broadcast meetings. This is not available as yet. It is in preview. There is a limited preview of this right now that's available. And effectively allows you to scale and run up to 10,000 users. That's a theoretical limit. I mean, we technically could scale way, way beyond that, all right, inside a web meeting. Now, how it works is I go and I schedule a broadcast meeting, okay? I allocate that meeting time as a broadcast meeting, and I allocate who's going to be part of the events team, right? Because these large-scale meetings need a sort of a bit of management around there. Now, the way we've done it is we've not taken an external management approach. It's so you manage it inside your own organization across there. So I could nominate Vaktang as to be a producer as part of my broadcast meeting. So he could be in charge, and he can line up and upload all of the different content, okay? He can have all of the different presenters who are nominated as well, and he can tee them up and switch and sort of really produce the call in real time. We can do things like include Yammer feeds across here. So we get, actually, rather than just being that one-way thing, we can get some interaction across there. Bing Pulse is another really, really neat one across here. So we can get real-time analytics of a large-scale call to get sentiment and feeling around how that call's talking. Is Paul talking about, is that good, is that bad, am I falling asleep, and we, as the organization or the events team can take that data and, act upon that during the meeting as it comes in. So that is the concept of a broadcast meeting. So again, this is really subject to the demo gods, because 5 to 9, this wasn't working across here, so we'll flick across and have a little play. Anyway, it's always good to show. We could have done a recording of it and showed it, but it's much more believable when you see it. Across it. So here is a Skype broadcast I set up earlier, okay? And you see I've got, again, it's a bit like the web client, right? So it's just popped up in a browser. I can sign in as an event team member across here. Hopefully, fingers crossed, this is going to let me go. So the demo gods are not going to play nicely across there. Hold on 2 seconds. Not getting the connectivity out there, unfortunately. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make some time in the video session tomorrow, and we'll actually recap and go across there. But effectively what happens is, I'll just describe the experience to you. Maybe I should have had a recording as a backup on it. But what actually happens is, on my client, you will actually see it'll pop up, and it will have a couple of different buttons coming in there, which are actually saying broadcast meeting. I can upload content. I can click on the video stream of the presenters who are in the meeting. And I have a start broadcast button on there. So I can right click onto Vaktang's video as a presenter in a meeting, say make him the active video. His video is now live. The content's teed up and it's on the screen of my client. And inside my meeting window in the Skype Business client, I say start broadcast. And it's a bang, you get the big, hey, you've gone live. Your meeting is now live and you're away across there. People who have just clicked and joined, you will just go straight through a browser when you've clicked in on that link to actually join through there. There's zero plugin, you're just consuming a stream. Technically, how we're doing that is we're actually sending this up to Azure, packaging it up, and delivering it across our Azure Media Services, which is what allows us to scale sort of, you know, to many, many thousands. We say 10,000 users can actually join a broadcast meeting coming through there. So you do it for, you know, from a browser on a mobile phone, tablet, PC, or any device coming through there. All right, it's near real time, okay, because we are effectively packaging this up as I'm talking and presenting on my client. It's going up, it's then getting packaged and pushed out via Azure and consumed across there. Now, you know, Azure Media Services is how we deliver the Sochi Olympics, all right, Winter Olympics, and how we stream that thing out across the world. So we have the capability there in actually delivering this en masse and on scale. But we'll try and get this demo fired up tomorrow so we can actually do it across there. Hmm? Try again. You reckon it could be going? Okay. Let me flick back. Waits with bated breath for the spinning wheel to stop. That'll be a no. You just want to humiliate me once more time, right? Not a problem. Okay. Anyway, in the interest of time, we'll flick back and move on because we want to get on and what we were going to do was get a whole bunch of you to join across here so you can see the experience. But we will recap and we will do that one tomorrow. So it's one more reason to actually come to the video interop session that we have coming through there. So I want to go through now in the last part and really look around what's new from a server perspective and for the online service through Office 365. There's one new server role. And again, this will be covered off in detail in the session tomorrow, all right? But again, when we talk around those meeting rooms, a lot of that traditional meeting room equipment you may have investments in, okay, that's stuff that you want to keep, okay? I bought this Cisco Tamberg video conference room, yeah, I'm going to Skype for Business. I don't want it to sit there just gathering dust. How do I take advantage and use it in that Skype for Business server environment we have coming through? So what we've done, and this request coming from lots and lots of customers, we introduced something called the VIS, the Video Interoperability Server. Now, basically what it allows us to do in this phase is take a whole range of different Cisco VC devices, and if you go on TechNet, there's a list of which ones are currently supported across on here, and allow us effectively to take a SIP trunk from this guy into Call Manager, so we can now extend that through, and I can include those video endpoints from Cisco Tamberg as a native part of my Skype for Business meeting experience or in a peer-to-peer call. Now, there are some limitations around what you can do, what you can't do, right? So it doesn't include content across here, right? So this is voice and video we have coming across all there, because obviously we're hitting across a SIP trunk. So, you know, if I'm in a room with a Tamberg system and I want to have content as well, then I just take in a laptop, plug it in there, and use that to plug in and project my content. So there's ways to actually deliver that sort of rich experience all the way through. But this means I don't need anything in terms of expensive hardware, middleware, gateways to bring in that other environment into the mix, okay, from Cisco. You know, traditionally, when you're looking at video conferencing, especially across New Zealand, you know, the two most dominant players are Polycom and Cisco. Obviously, Polycom, we have a very deep alliance around Skype for Business and their capability and their stuff, which works natively. Obviously, as we extend that out now, what about, you know, Cisco and Tamberg? We were wanting to address that stuff as well, so you can bring that into the mix and make that far more usable. So that's the video interop server, and again, you can learn more around that one tomorrow. A bunch of reports, an additional nice web sort of UI around additional reports for users around manageability. You know, call quality dashboard. So here, you know, as a sample, and there's a whole bunch of different of new reports coming in here, but I can look at my managed audio streams and trending against my unmanaged, right? So basically what I'm saying is I'm comparing my calls are there or I have them there. You know, when I'm on the network and I have quality of service and call admission control and everything fully managed in terms of my call end-to-end coming across there versus how does my quality look, you know, on an unmanaged network such as I was calling Vactang, right? And we had some video chop and stuff going on across there. You know, you can see obviously, you know, the quality is going to drop far lower, which is to be expected once you're on an unknown sort of entity such as the internet across there. But again, what I can do from here is then double click and drill through and take that all the way in to get right down to the root of the data across there. So there's a bunch of new data and reports we have coming through across there. So well worth a look. And I would, you know, if you're deploying Skype for Business and you're doing media, voice and video, if it's just internally, always deploy this and make sure you have it there, right? Because it adds so much value in terms of troubleshooting or trying to find out, I've got a network segment between, you know, Hamilton and Wellington that's causing me issues, and really dialing in. And these reports really help you establish where those issues are very, very quickly. The SQL world has moved on, apparently. So not everyone uses SQL mirroring anymore. So always on technology was there from, I think, SQL 2012, and obviously now in SQL 2014, okay? Gives us a much more robust HA sort of DR solution across there, rather than having that sort of, you know, single database and its mirror. You know, you now have multiples across on here, okay? There is much more fix it around the always on capability, right? You know, I can have up to three corresponding secondary replicas running from my primary across here. So if your SQL guys are saying, no, we're moving to always on, we've got to support that stuff, no issues at all. We now have that through in Skype for Business as well. One of the really nice things, though, is we said the architecture is the same as Link Server 2013. What that means is if you have Link Server 2013 today deployed, it is an in-place upgrade to go to Skype for Business Server 2015 on-premise, okay? Now, you'll see down the bottom there, there's some different scenarios depending on where you are effectively, but you know, if your topology is Link 2013 and your new topology, Skype for Business and 2013, it's an in-place upgrade, bingo. The clients are forward and backwards compatible, okay? It's a very, very easy process for you to upgrade. You know, we joke about saying go next, 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 finish. It is not much more than that to take, you know, a Link Server environment up to Skype for Business, you know. Probably a couple more steps than next, 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 finish. But, you know, it is very, very simple as it has coming through there. If you're in the state where you have Link 2010 across there, okay, you'll see you need to migrate off of that guy, right? There is no in-place upgrade. Get it up to 2013, then do the in-place upgrade across there. And if you have a coexistence scenario, Link 2010 and Link 2013, just as we always have historically across there, you can't have tri-version existence across there, right? So you've got to get everything up again to 2013, then do your in-place upgrade when it comes through, all right? But from Link Server 2013, it is not a really, really hard project or long-term project to get that through. Okay, I'm starting to get into our Q&A time, so we'll move across this stuff. Patching, really, really easy across there, all right? Again, I'll just summarize on here, and you can read the data on the slides around later. If you had a really large environment, if you had 12 front-end servers in your pool, you wanted to go and patch those servers. That could take you out for a day, historically, with Link, all right? You know, I'd be gone for 8 or 12 hours while I actually went through and patched those and done the process, all right? Quite a convoluted process to keep those things always up to date across there. Now, real, real simple. A couple of commands, all right? Invoke CS computer failover, okay? Stops the front end, takes it out of rotation, takes the replicas out, bingo, I then go patch it and then invoke it and bring it back across there. And there's a whole bunch of smarts and automation. Oh, there's my timer. Breakfast done across there. A whole bunch of automation at the back end that takes care of looking at, you know, hey, are there any issues in the pool there right now? If there is any existing replica issues, it won't let you do stuff. So you're not going to, you know, if you've got a, you know, three servers in your pool and two of them are already down and you went to go and patch the other one across there, it's, you know, there's some real intelligence around there that really drives that. Makes it very, very simple. So now we're saying, you know, from 12 hours potentially, or 8 to 12 hours for 12 front ends in a pool, you're now looking effectively around 2 to 3 hours to patch an entire environment across there. So that's a quick summary of some of the stuff, right? We've glossed over a lot of this stuff at a higher level to give you a bit of a view. Now, in the interest of doing a bit of a level set, we said at the start around Link Server and some of the things, there's a whole bunch of new terminology that's been introduced. And there's a bit of confusion out there around what it all means. So we just wanted to say, all right, this is what it is. Because people are saying to me, you have Skype for Business online now as a service. I say, yep, yeah, we had it with Link, we have it with Skype Business. And I'm hearing there's now this PSTN from the cloud, and I can have my voice in the cloud and take everything from there, from Office 365, and wonderful, and I can throw all my PBX away and don't need any infrastructure across there. Well, yeah, absolutely, in time, right? What we really have, though, today is just to establish where these things are and what their availability is from a New Zealand perspective. Skype for Business hybrid. Okay, this was something we used to have with Link 2013 for a while, and it sort of went away. Really means the deployment of Skype for Business on-prem and Office 365, which are basically using or sharing a single SIP domain, right? It used to be called split domain across Link 2013 across us. So this is a hybrid world, right? Hybrid is very, very important. When I think about the broadcast meetings, which I didn't demo, across there, what I talked about on there, okay? Skype for Business Broadcast Meetings is an online service that we pick up for our Azure. It will require you to have either Skype for Business through Office 365 or a Skype for Business hybrid environment to take advantage of that, okay? Not just an on-prem. So there are some, you know, caveats, and it's a lot of around how we're doing feature development as we evolve. A lot of this stuff will start to come out cloud first and take advantage of it. So hybrid becomes a really, really critical architecture, potentially moving forward to take advantage of some of those additional features. Skype meeting broadcast, again, we've already touched on that. That is that large scale stream up to 10,000 users, okay, for a meeting broadcast. I say it can be hosted online and on-prem, so I can have my on-prem environment and my on-prem client, but effectively I need to have established a hybrid environment hooked up to 365 to get this there. Now this is currently in preview. If you're running large-scale meetings with more than 500 users, okay, in September, October timeframe, let myself or Vaktang know, and if you're interested in trying on the preview, we can get that on it. I guarantee it'll be more successful than my sort of very early beta one I have running across here, you know, for sure across there. PSDN conferencing, again, something else we are introducing. PSDN conferencing, if you've got an Office 365 service, which today, right, gives you everything you can get in server minus some of the enterprise voice capability, right? Today we don't have PSDN in the cloud, we can't sort of do that. Advanced call routing, PBX stuff requires an on-prem architecture. So with Office 365 and Skype Business Service, we are introducing something called PSDN conferencing, all right? Where basically as Microsoft, we will provide you, Mr. Customer, with dial-in phone numbers from a range of countries around the world in time, okay? So people can have a local number or a free phone number. So if you just want to host a traditional audio conference or have a mix of some users with video and some dialing in just over traditional plain old, you know, telephony system over the mobile phones or dialing in, whatever it happens to be, we will provide that, okay? And we will bundle up and encapsulate that in calling plans and everything else across there when it has coming through. Now, again, this is currently in the preview for the US only, okay? And I think it's slated to launch around about the December timeframe or end of the year timeframe across there. After that, we'll be rolling out around the world, you know, pretty rapidly across there and offering this service across there. So that's PSDN conferencing. So understand, when we talk about Microsoft PSDN conferencing, it's a Microsoft providing you the numbers in the cloud to take advantage of that. Cloud PBX is another one, and this is where most of the confusion really lies, all right? So there are two flavors of what we call cloud PBX. Office 365, okay? I have that as my Skype for Business service, and I want to have, you know, all of the phone numbers attached to that stuff. I want my users to have a phone number and a DDI number, so, you know, they can make and receive phone calls just as they would do if it was an on-prem deployment I have coming through there, all right? There is no capability in Office 365 today to actually allow that to happen. Now, we are introducing it, all right? So cloud PBX with PSDN calling. This, again, is Microsoft providing you all of your phone numbers, okay, all of what would traditionally were your trunks coming into your site, into your PBX. We are going to provide those into Office 365, okay, and again, this is in preview in the US right now where it launches first, okay, then again, we will roll out around the world over time as we move forward, and will effectively allow you, if you wanted to have zero infrastructure, okay, to actually take advantage and have a fully cloud-hosted PBX platform with telephony lines. And again, with things like ExpressRoute, we can then also offer you a managed service or a managed network service to get to the cloud. So in time, think around things like quality of service and call and mission control can be enforced even though you're taking telephony or communications or real-time communications from a cloud service coming in there. Okay, so that's the US. Now, obviously, there's a bunch of regulatory stuff. When you think about Office 365 in New Zealand, we're delivering that out of Australia, all right? Now, telco regulation, where can the numbers live? Can I take New Zealand phone numbers and plug them into a data center in Australia? There's a whole bunch of regulatory stuff that needs to be worked through, right, to be able to ask to offer this service, and which is where we're, you know, really driving towards. So there are other options available, and again, this is in, are we in preview worldwide, Vaktang? 1 second. Not yet, not in preview worldwide yet, but this is something that will be coming sooner, which is really a hybrid technology. So this is cloud PBX with on-premise PSDN connectivity, okay? So again, I have my users, okay? I have my Office 365 service. They're consuming everything from there. But what I can have is a minimal footprint on premises, okay, around there, be it front end and edge today or whatever moving forward coming there, and with my PSDN trunks connected into my local data center, my local site. It could be my local telco is hosting that component for me and delivering those trunks. That gives you that ability to have all of your call control and everything delivered from a cloud PBX, okay, but keeping your trunks and everything you may have if you've got existing contracts and things, and keeping all of that local. So I think that, from a New Zealand perspective, will again will be a very sort of widely adopted architecture moving forward as people evolve towards the cloud as we come through there. Okay, I said we'd save 15 minutes for Q&A, and I've saved about five. So you might not have to buy that many beers, Vaktang, if we get too many hard questions are coming through there. So with that, so thank you for coming along. I'll say we'll open it up for Q&A now. I'll get Vaktang, do you want to come up on the stage on there? And if anybody wants to earn themselves a beer, because he did promise that, then fire him a tough question. Okay, yep. So the question was, for the browser, will the browser client work across Firefox and Linux users? So as far as I'm aware, Vaktang, correct me if I'm wrong, we support Firefox, Safari, and Chrome still, is there? And obviously, you know, the Microsoft browser range as well.
Except it's a Windows and Mac platform. No Linux yet. If your platform is Linux, no. It's only Windows and Mac platform. Because the browser will need to get to the server and download the plugin. So we only have plugin for Mac and Windows platform, not for Linux yet. We haven't really seen that big demand for that feature. If you have a request, please let us know the features and functionality. We can definitely provide the feedback to product group.
So the question was, what's the minimum CU level on Link 2013 to upgrade for Skype for Business?
I think the only CU level is the 2010. You need to be, I believe, in June. Then you can migrate 2010 directly to Skype for Business, but I believe vanilla 2013 should be able to get to Skype for Business.
So for existing LRS systems, do you need to have a client app? So I don't quite understand the... What, you mean build one yourself, you mean, or...? I mean, the customers have done it, right? So they've taken and built what you for a meeting room and sort of built their own meeting room experience, you know? There's a bunch of vendors who have done that, and they just use the standard API set we expose. So they built their own meeting room experience. So you can customize and use the web APIs and stuff out of Skype for Business and build your own if you want to, or use a client and stuff. It's been done in a number of different ways across there. I do think, though, when the likes of these devices at the price points, the cost of going and custom developing your own client app, unless you've got in-house capability, I think we'll start to see a shift towards that sort of stuff. But yes, you could do if you wanted to. So you're saying you have an Office, the question is if you have an Office 365 service? Yep. Okay, so the best way you would join, so say I'm using Office 365 and I wanted to join an on-premise meeting invite for Skype Business meeting invite. I mean, when you first click, as a user, if I'm using Gates Office 365 and I click to join the meeting, all right, from the meeting invite you've sent me from your on-prem environment across there, okay, it's going to do a check to see if I have the client, and it will use the client to join the meeting across there by default. If I don't have the client, that's what I've done with a trip with a question mark SL equals one to force that browser experience coming out. So the first one was around the Skype Consumer Federation. Is it out of the box with Skype for Business? Can it be disabled or enabled across there? So it has to be set up. It has to be switched on across it. We've got a documented process. It's a very, very simple process to enable that across there. You know, the capability to do directory search is in the Skype for Business client, okay, across there. You won't see that in the previous link client, even with the Skype for Business backend. So that's coming through from there to expose the directory. But yes, there's control in terms of how you enable and disable that across there was the first question. And the second question was, I forgot what it was.
About real-time analytics.
Reporting.
We do not provide real-time analytics during a call. Traditionally, once the call is completed, then server generates the stats. But you can possibly explore the capabilities of SDN, because through the SDN API, software basically defined networking, we throw a lot of stats to switches on the status of the calls. So you could possibly explore, but I don't think it's going to be very specific. We don't publish very specific confidence-related stats.
It's not even something that would come up in
SPOM
package or Skype.
Nah, I don't. It sits on top of the, if you go outside, yes, third party, yes. We're talking about the box itself. Again, they hook up into the SDN interface to get some stats out of it. But if you're talking about the very specific conference content, it depends where, the question is where does my tenant live? Because once you provision, once you sign up to Office 365, we give you tenant. We lend your tenant into the data center. Now, if I believe now all the
new ones are Australia.
The new ones are sitting out of Australia. If you are not out of Australia, you should have been migrated into that one. So you should be there, but as an admin, you can always go and check through a portal and see where you are.
Cool. Yep, right at the back.
Does the link between 10 client work with Skype for Business server?
2010 client work, it should be able. As we usually go, we are N-1 compatibility. So 2010 should be able to work with that, but you will not get all the latest functionalities like multi-view. You will not get video codecs in the client. So as long as you understand those implications, you should be able. We have a lot of cases where customers are thinking going into Skype for Business, and they've got a bunch of XP devices sitting on network. The only client you can put into XP device is 2010. So it is working. Does a Skype for Business does a single sign-on? Yes, it does.
No, so you just use your domain credentials in terms of single sign-on to get in for Skype for Business. You don't need to have separate credentials. Any more for any more? So how many beers did you're off the hook, are you, from a beers perspective? Yeah. Okay, so just to close off, again, you know, the slides will be available, and I hope the recording will be available later on for you to go down there. Please make sure you go and do the eval sessions. There are some funky prizes which you can go and win across there. And then don't forget those other Skype for Business sessions we have, you know, two tomorrow, one on Friday. We'll get this Roundtable 100 demoed for you. It's well worth seeing across on there. And likewise with the broadcast meetings, which I guarantee we'll get going tomorrow. I'll sit there and we'll ensure that's up so you can see what that looks like across on there. So with that, thank you very much for attending and enjoy the rest.